This week's episode of Zero Block 30 is brought to you by our friends at First Leaf. If you're trying to get into the wine game, First Leaf is the way to go because they expertly pick your wines for you. They tailor them for you. The wine that you taste and rate, the more wines that you taste and rate, the better they customize your box for you. So if you don't like a real deep red, then they'll give you something a little bit lighter, like maybe a Pinot Noir next time. They're not going to give you the Cab Sauv or something like that. You can have the introductory pack of three wines for just $5 a bottle and get started with wines that usually go for $20 a piece, and you'll get them for $5 each. Great, great deal. And the best part is that they get delivered to your house on a day that you can schedule. You can schedule it on their website, and they don't mind that at all. So you know that you're going to be home when the wine actually comes. My wife was standing at the door, giddy with glee, whenever the wine box came. She was so stoked. We actually ordered a big-ass box the first time. She stocked up our little wine thing, and it was way cheaper than she used to, like than it used to be, because she actually used two emails to get it going. So she kind of like broke the system there a little bit, my name and her name. So it's not really cheating because we are two different people, but you could do that as well. Do that by going to tryfirstleaf.com/chaps. That's tryfirstleaf.com/chaps. They are going to give you, again, three bottles of wine for only $15 if you go to tryfirstleaves.com/chaps. That's a great deal. I stand by these wines. You will too when you have them. So tryfirstleaves.com today and you'll get great, great wines. Let's go with the great, great pod. All right, so it's big time news all over the ZBT gang. Connor, we usually record on Thursday. Connor's going to San Fran, right?
San Francisco.
What are you doing out there?
Just visiting, you know, restaurants, eating, going to wine country. We're doing a day in Sonoma, spending a night in Sonoma as well. Really just exploring the city for the first time.
Will you bring the mic a little closer to your face?
Yeah, sure.
There we go.
Sorry.
Yeah,
I think That will be the first and last time Chaps asked to hear me louder.
Yep. So we saw a friend of the program, Kelly Keeks, go out to that area of the country a couple weeks ago via Instagram, and I was mad jealous just because the area is just so damn beautiful, so beautiful. To step out of New York City and go into wine country has got to be, like, shocking to the palate of the eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be very eye-opening, and I just thought of this. Going to wine country, if you guys want some wine, just I think the way they do it out there, you could just, like, send it back.
Well, if they want some wine, they should go to tryfirstleaf.com/chaps, and they can get three wines for only $15 on their first order.
Wow. All right. Well, they should do that first and foremost.
Honestly, if I was you, I wouldn't even bother going to Sonoma.
Why are you
going to
go now?
Why go there when you can go to First Leaf? I always say. But I've been
you have always said that, Kate.
I've been saying that for years. I've been out there a couple times, and I thought, like, Sonoma was going to be snobby. No, it is a blast. I have had some good times.
I can't imagine.
Yeah, everyone talks about Napa, and you don't hear Sonoma talked about as much, so I'm interested to see what it's all about.
Well, wine people with Sonoma know that, like, it's supposed to be the New World wines. Like, that's where they go, is from Sonoma. So especially if you like deep, full-bodied reds.
That's me.
There you go. Kate, you had some big news this week. Would you like to share it with the platoon?
I would. I was just trying to think of something funny to say really quick that wasn't the real thing. But
I haven't had diarrhea this week.
Yeah. I didn't have Chap's mom-in-law syndrome. I'm fine. But no, I am hired full-time at Barstool Sports, you guys.
Woo! What a big-time move. Big-time move.
Yeah. Not going to lie. I've been wanting that to happen for a long time, and I am so excited. I've been cheesing. I'm getting permanent smile marks on my face, so that's a good thing.
So when Kanz and I started the pod, we kind of went through our background, how we got to Barstool. So let's break it down for you. Whenever you left the Marine Corps, walk us through what happened after you left the Marine Corps.
Yeah, so after I left the Marines, I moved to New York City and finished up my degree at Fordham University. So while I was doing that, I volunteered with The Mission Continues, who, their leader aside, great organization. it's a whole other story. But great organization, still is. And they were contacted by Jon Stewart at The Daily Show, and he was looking for veterans who were communication majors, film majors, to spend a semester, like an internship of sorts, learning the television business. So I was lucky enough to get tapped for that in my last semester at Fordham. And so every week I'd go over to The Daily Show, and you would get to pick. One week you're picking the brains of the cameramen. The next you're in the writer's room from morning till when they shoot the show at night. You just get to see all aspects of it. And I absolutely fell in love with comedy writing. I had always been into that anyway, but it was the first time I was ever like, this is what I want to do. I want to be a writer.
Now, did you have that moment, like whenever I first started at Barstool and working with other really funny people, whenever you would read their work, be like, fuck, man, I've got a long ways to go.
Yes, 100%. And a lot of people, like at first I was looking at them, I'm like, oh, they're so lucky. But every writer on these shows, and they have to work their asses off to get there. They still go to open mic nights and comedy nights just like everybody else. Like, it still takes a lot of work. But I knew I wanted to do something like that. So I started writing for Duffelblog, which is a military satire site. And I found that I really enjoyed it. I loved it. And then after that, I got a job at Comedy Central in the production department. And I was there for a little over 2 years. And again, I started doing sketch and stand-up and improv. And I just completely immersed myself in that world. Then I went through a bad breakup and I got extremely weird for a couple years, moved down to Philadelphia. Drank a little bit of rum in a basement that was my aunt's where I lived.
I'm just glad that you could admit that everybody has that. Like, you get out of the Marine Corps or something, you get out of the military and there's some terrible breakup, some life event happens, and you just drink a lot and get used to that lifestyle. And then you have to switch it up and be like, I am going to die if I continue doing this.
Yeah, one weekend I like rented a hotel room down in Rehoboth Beach, and I was like, I'm just gonna get fucked up and write in my notebook. And then on like Sunday morning, I woke up, looked at my notebook, and I was like, you've gotten way too weird. You need to turn it around now. Like, what is this? Yeah, it was very strange. I was like singing Biggie Smalls karaoke in a gay bar. At, like, I don't know.
That was the point. Biggie Smalls in a gay bar.
I was like, this is really super fun, but I don't see a future in this for you.
Imagine that.
Yeah, so then started going back to school to be a dental hygienist. I was like, why don't you just find a steady job and then do what you love, like writing on the side? Because you'll never, I always told myself, like, you don't have it. Like, you'll never, I looked at everybody else who's doing what I wanted to do, and I always told myself, well, you can't do that. But then I found out I really sucked at science and dental hygiene stuff.
Maybe I should go back to writing.
So I was like, I don't know this. What I know is writing. And I decided to stop telling myself that. And I told myself, if you never try, you'll never know. And I was super lucky enough towards the end of that semester at dental hygiene school to go and get a calzone.
There you go.
I was feeling really a little smart. Down. Went and got a calzone, and it looked exactly like a vagina. Uh-huh. And somebody, I posted it on Twitter because who wouldn't? And somebody tagged Chaps in the post, and they're like, hey, check this out, you blog about, and I didn't realize Chaps had like a whole thing about vagina shaped foods. I was out of the loop.
Yeah,
well, not just foods, pretty much vagina shaped anything.
Dicks too.
And I just like got a tweet that was just like a giant set of eyeballs, and he was like, do you mind if I use this? And I was like, what the hell?
Yeah, sure. And I was joking because I was going to use it either way, like, because yeah. I did the thing where you like a news organization goes into and like, hey, sorry that you got in a plane crash. Can we use this like on all of our platforms? I basically did that same thing. And then Kate wrote me after, I think like 500 people liked the tweet. And it was like a direct reply. I don't know how that many people even saw it. And you were just like, so what the fuck is your deal?
Yeah. I was like, what the hell is this? But I was super intrigued. And then I was like all about, I like fell into the world of Chaps and was like, whoa, what is this place? It was super fun. And then.
Did you, Kate, at that point, did you already know about Barstool?
Yes, I did. Knew about Barstool. I just wasn't in Chaps niche vagina food market. Yeah. I was somehow... I missed that one. But yes, I definitely knew about Barstool. And like a lot of it was the negative things I had seen, to be completely honest. So I was like kind of weary. And then the more I fell into it, the more I was like, oh, this is fucking awesome.
Yeah, I think that's like, actually perfect. Good. Let's walk in your first couple experiences like with people at Barstool and how that went. Because a lot of people like to hear that behind, pulled back the curtain, how things go down with Barstool too.
Yeah, everybody... People couldn't have been nicer, especially like starting with Zero Blog 30. Like, Connor, you have been incredible the whole time and awesome and so welcoming. Same with you, Chaps. Same with our producer, PFC Bren. Always so helpful. When I showed interest, the guys, just for our audience, the guys at Zero Block 30 were the first ones to be like, hey, here's a microphone that we're going to send you. Hey, here's some tips and advice for posting. Like, you guys were also awesome about that. And I was actually kind of a little surprised because of all the negative stuff I'd seen about Barstool. And then when I started going up there to record the podcast in studio with you guys, I was actually like nervous the first time I walked in the doors. And right away, everyone was so nice. I think I met Liz right away, mm-hmm. was chatting me up. Just a whole bunch of the characters, I call them characters, but like personality wise, the characters.
Yeah, like it is. I mean, it is characters. Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, what am I going to? Everybody was coming up saying, hello, who are you? Blah, blah, blah. And it was just so nice. And from then on, it's just been.
And you were at a spot where you were coming up because you were like just doing basically like social media kind of intern and getting your feet wet. So you were like crashing on your couch. You didn't even stay with somebody that had like a mattress from Lisa Mattress. Lisa is the most innovative mattress company in the world. And more importantly, it's Larry's two sponsor who has completely changed the dreaded old school mattress buying experience. So much we invented a tagline for them, which is mattress, mattress, mattress. No one wants to spend hours visiting those awkward showroom floors or sleeping on somebody's couch in New York because you're trying to get a job with Barstool. If you're trying to get a job with Barstool, the best way to do it is with Lisa Mattress, which started just $525. It's quickly and conveniently ordered online, made to order and shipped compressed in a box to your door within days. Unboxing the mattress is half the fun. Now for Stoolies right now, you can go to leesa.com/barstool today to receive an exclusive $125 off the Lisa Mattress. Just for the Stoolies. Again, that's leesa.com/barstool, leesa.com/barstool, and you'll get $125 off. So you came up to work with us a little bit, and you noticed that everybody wasn't a dickhead.
No, like literally no one was a dickhead, and I was almost disappointed. I was like, what the fuck? I was expecting a little.
You were expecting to get off the elevator and everyone to just be a super misogynistic jerk right in your face. Meanwhile, everyone's busy. It's fairly quiet most of the time when you walk in the office.
Just yeah. They need a company gunny, though. That motherfucker's dirty as hell.
That much is true. It is definitely a little messy. But, yeah, no, I couldn't. I, like, walked out of there with a whole new – I did a 180. I mean, not a full 180. I already liked – like, I knew it was already cooler than what I thought initially. But I was just, like, blown away. And everybody there what was it? If I need some help with, because I had been doing the social media for Zero Blog 30 then mm-hmm. since fall, I reached out to Monica Molnar. Is that mm-hmm. on?
Yeah.
And
Marina.
Marina.
Oh, Marina. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
Marina who does Spit and Chicklets.
She's awesome.
Yeah, she's incredible. And
right away, wrote, here's my email address. If you need any help, let me know. Paul, who I know he goes by a different name,
Gaz.
But he
yeah.
was.
Gaz.
Yes, he sat down with me and like took time out of his day to what are best practices for, I mean, any question I ever had, they're like, oh, go talk to that person over there. Tap them on the shoulder. They take the time out of their day to help you with something. So I was just like completely blown away with it. And from Erica and even Dave, everybody was just really cool. So
And our stories are so similar. Somebody tagged me in a tweet. Somebody tagged you in a tweet. I had accepted a job with like this startup fantasy football place where I was going to have like a little nighttime show where I talked about fantasy football and make like no money. And then next thing I know, somebody tagged Portnoy in a tweet and was like, this dude's really funny. He's talented. You should hire him. And I ended up getting a job. So it's the same thing like you. Sometimes we just need to catch that break. We recognize talent. Kate, you're incredibly talented and happy to have you on Zero Block 30. We will move on past that to there was some bombings this week. Like it hasn't been a full week yet. There were some bombings. We talked with Adam Kinzinger on a serious special. If you haven't listened to that, there's a lot of good information on that. EOD Mike was incredible as well. That story that he told about Syria and how encased ISIS is in the surrounding area really has stuck with me and made me think a lot more about what it would be like to have life on the ground. But from a professional media perspective, Kate and I got a chance to talk with Essie Cupp from CNN, who also does stuff all over the place. Essie was great. You'll hear her now.
I got my ticket for the long way round to buy the whiskey for the way.
Well, now Zero Block 30, we have the privilege of welcoming Essie Cupp She has been around the program for a while. Me and Cons and Kate all follow her on Twitter. She's a great follow. Even though I'm a libtard and she's a conservative, I like to to follow her because she's pretty fair and balanced, not to steal a Fox News quote, but she does a good job. Essie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. That was a lovely introduction.
It was. That's one of my specialties is good introductions. So right. We had Congressman Kinzinger on this past weekend when we did a serious special. But along with Adam, you have been a leading voice on Syria for a long time, not just on social media, but on your show as well. Can you kind of walk us through how you got just to be paying so much attention to what was going on in Syria and no one else was?
Well, I was on a show called Real News at The Blaze 7 years ago when this conflict first started. And the show was foreign policy heavy. And so it was in our purview to be covering these stories, even as they were just percolating. So I started covering Syria in the beginning when the first protests in Daraa, came about. And Assad started torturing his own innocent civilian women and children. So it came about for the job. Over the years, I would leave that show and go to work on shows that were less foreign policy centric. But I was still very much sort of engulfed in the story. And so it never left my mind, even though there were times when it sort of waned from public consumption. But I had a sense, as did many foreign policy watchers back in 2011, that this was going to erupt into a much larger geopolitical problem rather than just a contained civil war like Rwanda, for example. Just because the regional players were incredibly important people in the region.
Right.
Players like Russia and Iran and Hezbollah. So I kept an eye on it. And then I'll be honest, after the first chemical weapons photos came out, I was just, I was horrified. I was overcome. And I started taking the story from a less political perspective and more of a personal one. And I found that when I talked about Syria from a personal sort of emotional perspective rather than a political problem, more and more people got engaged in it.
Why do you think it takes that personal note instead of just a purely political note?
Because you know as well as I do, because you cover foreign policy, it's really hard to get people to care about what's going on over there. And over there can be, name your theater. It's really hard, and that's actually understandable. We've all got a lot going on in our lives. What's happening in our backyards, literally our own families, is generally as much bandwidth, right, as we have. And then we start adding on layers of domestic problems to worry about and cultural problems to worry about. And finally, maybe we get to this problem over there. But I could, make the case that 500,000 dead, 50,000 of them children, a genocide that's happening in real time without plausible deniability, because we all have seen the photos, matters for over here.
And I just wanted to ask real quick, I was reading through your tweets and one of them said, speaking on a personal level, you bring it to a personal level. One of your tweets said, too many of my Syrian friends have been shelled by Assad. My only interest is in saving lives there. Do you, with all the years you've been covering this, have you become friends with people in Syria? Like or is it mostly journalists, or do you have a level of personal involvement there now after all the time of research you've done there?
I do, and I've been lucky enough to have had a few of them on my show just in the past week because I have those relationships with some doctors on the ground in Syria, with some activists on the ground in Syria, and with some people who have fled Syria and have been to refugee camps in Jordan, for example, or other refugee camps around the world, and can really give good insight as to what is going on. And these are people I speak to every other couple of months, or certainly in the wave of an attack every day, multiple times a day. But I find that cultivating those relationships is really important to know what's going on the ground, because as good reporting as we're getting it's not always contextualized. So we need that.
Right.
And with your coverage of the Syrian conflict, large scale, and seeing it, and it's also notable to say that the first chemical weapon attack, and that there's been multiple chemical weapons attack, and just how insane.
200.
Just insane. 200. That's unbelievable. And then when you see the President of the United States stand up on Friday evening and give his thoughts, what went through your mind listening to President Trump speak on that issue?
You know, I'll be honest. Like after the limited airstrikes last year, I was very emotional because this has become personal. And not just because I have friends, but because I have seen these photographs of dead babies for too many years. And to see, even in a limited way, some kind of intervention, some kind of, and in this case, a coalition of international actors coming forward to say, this is not okay. 200 chemical weapons attacks on innocent people is not okay. It made me incredibly proud and relieved. And I know, believe me, this does nothing long-term to change the realities on the ground for Syria and for all of the other actors at play. I know that, I'm not naive. But after six years of inaction, it was emotional. It's who we are. It reminds me of who we are. And I don't love everything this president does, truly, but it was nice to see American might and moral certitude sort of coming back to the foreground for once in a very long time when it comes to Syria.
Where would you like to see us go from here?
I mean, I've always advocated in terms of policy for safe zones and negotiated diplomatic with military support return of 9.8 million Syrians to their home. They don't want to be refugees any more than their host country wants to host them. So they want to return home. Obviously, it's not a safe place or time for them to return home when even, you know, ceasefires are not respected. So a negotiated return home of millions and millions of Syrians would be a huge economic relief for regional actors and also just a practical relief for them. What happens to Assad? If it were me, Assad would be dead already. Right. But it's not, and I understand the complicated politics of ousting an elected world leader. But all I want for the immediate is a peaceful, negotiated return home of millions of Syrians within their country that is respected and upheld by international leaders.
And looking over your social media the last few really days, weeks, you could tell that you're getting frustrated with the people who are saying that the chemical weapons attacks is not real, it's a false flag. What do you say to those people? How do you keep a calm attitude and try to show them that, yes, this is actually happening?
She doesn't, and I admire that about her. She claps back at everyone.
Just going to say, if you read my most recent tweets, I don't keep a calm demeanor all the time. I try my best, but it's frustrating, A, when people come at me and say, you don't know what you're talking about, you don't understand the region. That's frustrating. Disagree with me, but do not say I have not done my homework. And these absurd propagandist assertions that this isn't real, that this isn't really happening, that this is staged, infuriates me because I know victims of chemical weapons attacks personally, and this is not staged, this is real. If you don't want to deal with it, you know, the politics of it, then stay out of it. But it is real, and we need to take all of this at face value and decide who we are as a country and what we want to do about it. And then finally, there's a category of people who say, yep, it's real, but it's not our problem. And I just think if you are mad that a coalition of Western forces attacked a chemical weapons factory responsible for the deaths of 500,000 people, a regime, you are on the wrong side of history. You are on the wrong side of history, and very quickly you will be judged by history.
When you got into journalism, did you think that you would get into Twitter spats with John Cruzat?
I saw that too.
One Ethan hope. John. No, I mean, no. And I, you know, I'm never a person that says, look, you know, you're an actor, just go act. I mean, I appreciate everyone should have feelings about about our political problems, and no one's barred from expressing them. But what I tried to have an intelligible conversation with him, and I it was gibberish what he was tweeting. I couldn't make sense of any. And then of course he's selling a book, and there's a whole lot going on with John Cusack. That was certainly one of my more interesting.
My
Twitter,
personal favorite part. I actually got like a big bowl of grapes like halfway through y'all's Twitter interactions, and I was just snacking on some grapes, enjoying some delicious grapes. And then when he told you to watch a movie to find out what was going on, I was that just sums up society so perfect. If you want to know, check out this documentary.
It was amazing, right? It was so perfect. I'm trying to argue based on facts and years of reporting and actually talking to people on the ground. And here's John Cusack, the actor, saying, "You don't know anything. Watch the movie."
Yeah, but Effie, in his defense, he was in Serendipity and 16 Candles. I think he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah. You didn't think about that, did you?
Yeah.
Definitely does. Yeah.
Maybe you should reevaluate things. Well, thank you, Essie, for taking the time. We know you're a busy woman. Appreciate you coming on the show.
When I'm gone, when I'm gone, you're gonna miss me when I'm gone. You're gonna miss me by my hair. You're gonna miss me everywhere.
Appreciate Miss Essie taking time out of her busy schedule. She is wonderful. If you don't follow her on Twitter, you should definitely do it. If you don't watch your show, you should definitely do it. And she shows up on podcasts time and time again, and she always does outstanding work, really well prepared. It was great to have SE on the show. And that interview was brought to you by our friends at MyBookie. MyBookie is the place where you want to go to the bets. We are in the full swing of NHL playoffs. We are in the full swing of NBA. Basketball's back. Hockey's back. Baseball's back. Everything's fucking back except for football. We can't wait for football to be back. But if you want to bet, I would only recommend a website for our listeners that's been good to me. If you want to experience the Las Vegas-style sporting book gambling from the comfort of your living room, MyBookie.ag is the only place that you'll want to check out. They offer pretty much every single sport in the league in the world, including esports and the League of Legends and Counter-Strike. In addition, you'll get casino games like blackjack, roulette, craps, and slots. MyBookie.ag has it all. Not to mention, you can play all their games on your cell phone, iPad, or tablet computer. It's entirely up to you, and you can literally play from everywhere. If you want to get into that action, go to mybookie.ag now and sign up with the promo code ZERO, that's Z-E-R-O, Zulu Echo Romeo Oscar, to ensure that you're eligible for all of our future promotions and bonuses. Visit Vegas from your couch today, mybookie.ag, using promo code ZERO. So there's a story that was going around. Not to just move past Syria, but we're going to fucking move past Syria. There's a story going around about an Air National Guard member who was doing a reenlistment bonus. Kate, you didn't reenlist, right? You did your one and done.
One and done.
And obviously Cons didn't, because you signed like basically a lifetime commitment when you're an officer. But
yep.
I reenlisted. And whenever you reenlist, you get this... like, kind of tradition says that you can really enlist any way you want to. Like, it's because you technically get out of the military for like 30 seconds and then you get back in. Your contract ends and then you start back again. So you have constantly throughout my career, I've been to reenlistment places where people have done it in a gas chamber, getting OC'd. Like, if you're a real hardo, I've seen people do it scuba diving, like at a wreckage site outside of Okinawa by some sea turtles. I've seen people do it on fishing boats, golf courses, wherever. You usually have the choice of however you want to. But inside that, there is sort of like, this is a really important thing. You don't want to take it lightly. But at the same time, a lot of times you're drunk as fuck when you do it too. Like, there's just so many histories, things that happen with reenlistments. That's why this story was kind of surprising. Let me explain what happened first. She was reenlisting. It was an E-7, so a master sergeant in the Air Force was reenlisting in the Air National Guard while she was taking the oath of enlistment. And rumor is that she was actually doing this video for her kid to show her kid, to make her kid laugh. They videoed her doing the oath of the enlistment with a dinosaur on her hand as a puppet and mouthing the words along. Now, on its face, I feel like that's probably bad judgment, right? Would you guys agree?
Yes.
Yeah.
Just on its face, it's bad judgment, but it's not appalling.
No.
I don't even know if I would say disrespectful. I would probably say unwise. Like, I feel like it's unwise.
I think that's a better way to describe it. It doesn't take away from what she was doing. I think it demeans it a little bit, in my opinion. because it's
not, it doesn't appear sacred, like, right?
Right. Right. Yeah. It's an important thing. And all the other examples that you gave, while some are crazy and some are a little outside the box, they all are rooted within the military and our traditions. Whereas you put a puppet on your hand, to me, that just seems a little too jokey. I know that's a really fine line and it's a weird line, but it's one of those things where you look at it and, like you said, Chaps, it just kind of seems like maybe we shouldn't do that.
Kate?
I think, well, do you think it matched the punishment? Did you see what finally came out of it?
Yeah, we're going to get into that too. I absolutely think that it was overboard.
Way overboard.
Way overboard, if you want to go into that.
And I've seen it a million zillion times, the reenlistment photo of the Navy sailors in the water, and they're all lined up in formation wearing giant rubber ducky tubes around them at a reenlistment ceremony. Like big, bright yellow rubber ducky tubes with duck heads, and everybody loved that one. And for this, and I've seen wacky stuff like that many times before, it goes viral. No one ever had a problem. And I'm going to say it. I hate to be that
say
person.
It.
I think if it was a guy, nobody would have given a shit. She looked a little I don't want to say frumpy, but like she's a woman. She looks like
possibly outside of body standards.
And it seemed a little silly. And
just looked a little goofy.
And from what I read, it was such a butthurt outrage from the veteran justice warriors on Facebook, the old timers who were like, how could she? Shut the fuck up. If she wants to dedicate her life to serving our country and she wants to make her kid laugh a little bit, or she wants to do it a little goofy, poor judgment, yeah. But in my opinion, if you're serving our country and that's what you want to do and I'm not in, you can do whatever the fuck you want. Like, I think that look at the past scandals in the Air Force with sexual assault and all these other things. I feel like this had swifter and more severe action immediately than anything that actually matters. And that's not just assault on women, plenty of men too. Like, and the Air Force has had a big problem with that. So I just thought this was absolutely, did she have poor judgment? Yeah, but I think the leadership of the Air Force had even worse judgment, and they should have actually stood up for her and been like, we'll handle this in our own way privately, but I wouldn't have fired, what was it, the guy who took the video? Sorry, I'm pissed.
Kate's riled up. I love it.
Yeah, I am riled up. I just think it was absolute dog shit compared to what the real issues in our services are, that like that's the hill that they decided to die on.
Yeah, somebody tweeted me that Air Force had two officers who flew nuclear weapons across the country, live nuclear weapons, and they got less of a punishment than the colonel did. To take a bird away from somebody and make them go back to a silver oak leaf is a big fucking deal. I mean, getting colonel is not an easy task. Getting light bird's not an easy task either. But getting colonel is a big deal, man. And even though with the retirement, the way it goes, it's your highest 3 tenured is what you get, like, for pay. So it doesn't take a lot of pay. But there's a huge difference when you're rolling through a gate as a colonel and a different when you're coming through the gate as a light bird. And you work your ass off for 20 plus years to get that bird, and to get it taken away because you gave somebody the oath of enlistment with a puppet on your hand is a little much. I mean, you remember Marines United, like there's been so many different sexual scandals across the board. I can't remember a single one where everybody involved was dealt with that swiftly.
And training accidents where people have died because the leadership fucked up on stuff. And like, I feel like this was worse. This was worse to them because their peers online got real butthurt about it and made a big hubbub about it. And I feel like instead of doing the right thing, they did the fucking dumb thing. I don't know.
I agree that the punishment certainly did not fit what was going on. It should have been significantly less. If I was that officer doing the oath of enlistment, I wouldn't have gotten too worked up, but I probably would have looked at her and said, you know, kind of like, all right, well, what do you think? Does this look that great? And maybe that's just the traditionalist in me, but it seemed just a little bit overboard.
I would have said, you've lost your goddamn mind. Like,
yeah,
it wouldn't have even got like it, because officers are the only ones. I don't know if our listeners know that officers are the only ones that can do the oath of enlistment. So if one of my Marines was going up to Cons and be like, "Hey, Cons, I listened to the podcast. I want you to do an oath of enlistment." Still now, to this day, if one of them came up to him, Cons could still perform that task. And I would say, absolutely fucking not with that puppet on your goddamn hand. You
right, want. Right.
And that's the E7 that was doing it. Like, that's what is baffling to me, is the E7. I could see if you're like a cutesy little like E3 and you're still bouncing your way through big boy school or big girl school through the military, but you're a goddamn adult as a staff NCO.
Right. Yeah. That's my thing. To reach those ranks, both Colonel, E7, you've been around the block for a lot of years. You have to know this is not a great idea.
But you our versions be more mature. Our versions of the military, sorry, Cons, are a little bit different. Like, what we experience might be very different from what, like, the culture and the, like, you know what I mean? But I don't know. I
understand what you're saying, but even in that, I don't think that it goes that far. Like, there, because I worked on an Air Force base, and the Air Force is 100% way more lax than the Marine Corps, and the Army. There's no doubt about it. But they do a lot of standards and customs and courtesies too, and I don't think that flies. And you know what? I want to say something else. When I posted it, yes, granted it was an Air National Guard member, but active duty members who shit on the Air Guard are fucking stupid. That shit's dumb. I hate that. Like, these people are doing a job for the country too. When the country needs them, they're going to go do it. I can't stand when other service members will denigrate another's service in any way, shape, or form. If you're an infantry dude and you shit on non-infantry dudes all the time, I think that's horseshit, because I've been there right along with you. I've been at the tippity tip of the spear with the reconnaissance marine running point for them. So just because you don't have an O3 designator or you don't have an Army or Marine Corps background, I can't fucking stand to see other people seriously denigrate the service of another. That shit pisses me the fuck off.
Yeah, service is service, no matter what capacity.
And also, while we're fucking doing rants, the Southwest pilot who is going to be our badass of the week, when I saw people saying that she wasn't a legit fighter pilot because at the time she was running training ops for the actual men fighter pilots, like, she had a goddamn choice. If you fly F-18s, you're a fucking fighter pilot. And to take that away from her in a moment of heroism where she saved countless people's lives is 100% horseshit. She is a fucking hero for her service to the country and for what she did on that flight.
I agree. So just the last point I'll make is, although I like to give the other services a hard time, and I think everybody likes to.
Ribbing is different than denigration.
Ribbing is fine, but I would never take anyone's service away. So if you're knocking those people for the branch of service they chose, shame on you. But, chaps, let's go right into talking about the Southwest pilot now, because that's a good transition there. So
she's badass. I don't know what you really say. To have the wherewithal. Brand, find the damn audio of her voice whenever she's talking to the air traffic controller. Let's put that in now.
Southwest 1380. I understand your emergency. Let me know when you want to go in.
Yeah, we have a part of the aircraft missing, so we're going to need to slow down a bit.
Southwest 1380, speed is your discretion. Maintain at any altitude above 3,000 feet.
Southwest 1380, you'd like to start turning inbound.
Southwest 1380, start turning southbound there. There's a Southwest 737 on a 4-mile final. We'll be turning southbound. Start looking for the airport. It's off to your right and slightly behind you there. And altitude is your discretion. Use caution for the downtown areas.
Okay, could you have the medical meet us there on the runway as well? We've got injured passengers.
Injured passengers, okay. And is your airplane physically on fire?
No, it's not on fire, but part of it's missing. They said there was a hole and someone went out.
It's chilling how calm she was. And I like to think that whenever situations get calm, I have the ability to kind of like calm down and really see what's going on. My wife is a planner. She plans everything in our lives, like from our budget to everything. I have no idea how much money I have. Don't care. She knows all that shit. When situations get stressful, that's when like I come into play, because I feel like I think calmly under pressure 99% of the time. She was like, barely had a pulse. She was so calm. It was unreal.
No, I agree, Chaps. And I saw one response that someone was trying to take away from what she did and said any pilot in her situation, any trained pilot would have done the same thing. We've talked multiple times how you can be the most trained individual in the world, but until you find yourself in a situation, you will not know for sure how you will act. So for her to remain the level of calm that she did and perform the way she did is certainly heroic, because I will say right now, not everyone who is trained the same as her, who has an F-18 background would have necessarily performed the same way. So to say that she's not a hero and that anybody would have done the same thing, I think is complete malarkey.
I mean, we would have done the same thing, right?
Right.
Yeah, probably. Totally. Mark Wahlberg would have done the same thing.
Yeah.
Probably better.
100%.
Because he has a dick. So.
Yeah. But I know, like, I got out of the Marine Corps and I'm like, oh, I'm a Marine. But, you know, you think in your head that, like, I could handle situations better than most. Thought that until there was a spider in my car on I-95, gang. I almost took out a van full of children, like, screeching over to the side. So, yeah, it's a good thing I wasn't at the helm of that flight.
I mean, just let's imagine, okay, you're a pilot and you are responsible for the safety. I think there was like 180 people on that flight.
Mm-hmm.
Your engine blows up. Probably a pretty stressful moment. Everybody's little oxygen things flows through. You get reports that somebody is getting sucked through a fucking window. At that point, imagine what the cabin of that plane sounded like in that moment. Those little doors
just
that go through, they are not soundproof. She hears everything. Her and her co-pilot hear everything that's going on. Shout out to the co-pilot, too, Air Force pilot. So they are going through mass chaos. Everybody's got to be freaking out, screaming. For her to be that calm, engine blown out, somebody's getting sucked out, everybody's freaking out in the back, and to give those instructions with that calmness and clarity and conciseness is... I mean, it's heroic. I don't know how else you can describe it. Like, we always talk about that the absence of fear is not courage, but courage is moving forward despite fear. Like, that is the definition of that. Because she has to be scared, but she managed to push that aside and to steal a quote from General Krulak. She marched to the sounds of the guns. It wasn't guns in that situation, but it was a very stressful situation. So shout out to her. Incredible. Incredible. What's also incredible is our Facebook group that we have on Barstool Podcast. We want you to go subscribe to that. The Barstool Podcast on Facebook. If you want to give us feedback about what you would like to see from the Facebook group, you can do that by going there. So all you have to do is search for Barstool Podcast Group on Facebook and you'll find it. We've had a lot of good feedback from there for Podfathers, for Part of My Take, for KFC Radio. Barstool has so many podcasts that are coming down the pipe that you won't even believe it. Some of them are huge names in sports that are coming down. Frank Kaminsky, who plays for the Charlotte Hornets, has one that now. There's other ones that are coming out. One of those is another one that I'm going to be a part of because I have a big announcement too. I am going to have a radio show from Sunday to Thursday nights, 10 to 12 midnight. It is Woo-hoo! Going to be me and Casey Smith. There will also be a 2-podcast portion of that a week. So we'll have a podcast on Monday, Wednesday, and then a best of on Friday. It's going to be fun, man. I'm looking forward to it.
What's it called, Jeff?
It's called High Haters. So if you want to go to iTunes and check it out, it's going to be called High Haters. The haters are going to be absolutely sick. I don't think I've been this excited about a project since I started Barstool. Like, this place is a lot. Zero Block 30 gives me the outlet to talk about things that are the most important issues outside of my family to me, and that's the life and care of veterans and what we actually have done for the country, what people are continuing to do for the country, and the mental health aspect after it. Podfathers is where I talk about my kids and my family, which is also a huge part of my life. Everything else in between will live on High Haters, and I cannot wait. So the weirdness that lives on my blogs, if you like my blogs, you're going to love that. If you don't like my blogs, you're probably not. But yeah. If you do,
there's
going
to be a lot of chaps coming down the pike.
A lot of chaps, man. It feels good to have, like, this is, like I tell people all the time, like Kate and I talked yesterday after she had her big announcement. This is a dream job for me. And when I was younger, when I was like 12, 13, 14 years old, I always wanted to be on Saturday Night Live. I watched shows like Dumb and Dumber, or I watched Tommy Boy. I watched Saturday Night Live, and I thought, you know what? That's the kind of shit I want to do. And really, it is now. Like, it's not the same scale as those Saturday Night Lives with Tommy, like, and all those guys. But it is exactly what I wanted to do. And to be able to live this dream after I got shot in 2007, after I went through a terrible divorce, dealt with PTSD and traumatic brain injuries, to be able to bounce back this way, it really makes me put my life in perspective and how fortunate I am at this point. And so I'm stoked to be able to share that with the listeners every single week. And I hope you guys know that we appreciate every single time that you listen, because it means the world. Because you listen, we get to do our dream job. It's fucking incredible.
I just want to, I feel the same way after I had that spider in my car on I-95. I just, like, thank God that this worked out. I don't know.
Thank God you get health insurance now.
Yeah, oh my God.
What if he bit you?
Yeah.
What's that? Oh, what if he bit me? I thought you said, what are they paying you? I was like, oh, well, Connor.
That's very forward on the pod. All right, so next week we'll be getting back with some more. I'll actually be – no, not next week. The week after that I'll be back in New York to do the launch of High Haters, so I can't wait to do that. Make sure that you follow along. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you – oh, we got to save Ron's alibis. Cool.
Well, I think we'd be remiss not to mention some two big losses this week.
Mm.
With
yes.
the loss of Arlie Emery and more recently Mrs. Barbara Bush, who passed away at the age of 92 this week. So pretty big losses there. I was telling Kate real quick, I had a chance. I you know, it's funny, Chaps, we've been doing this for a lot. It's been a long time since I slid in your DM that first time way back when. Mm-hmm. So you kind of forget what we've talked about and what we haven't. But I was fortunate enough when I was transitioning out of the military, I had a little bit of a gap where I had some time before I started working. And I was in Dark Knight Rises as a Gotham City police officer, which is a fun experience. And I was in the scene towards the end with Matthew Modine. And Matthew Modine, as we know, was Private Joker in Full Metal Jacket. And in between takes, he would just tell stories. And one of the stories he was telling was how Arlie Emery
Army
had the worst breath known to man, and that
smoke,
nobody
right?
actually
had to be smoke.
Well, it was a combination: coffee, cigarettes, and steroid spray. Because you remember how he's screaming and speaking in the small portion of Full Metal Jacket. People forget, like, he's only in the very first, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes. He's not in the whole movie.
The rest of the movie fucking sucks.
It really kind of does. I remember the first time I ever saw that movie, and I'm laughing at the basic training just because of how gregarious he is. But then he's gone, and you're like, wait, this movie's kind of depressing and sad. But anyway, just how loud and crazy he was, he needed steroid spray on his throat. So the combinations of those things, Modine was saying nobody wanted to work with him because you basically would faint anytime he breathed anywhere near you. And you remember he was up in everybody's face, so... tough loss there, because he went on to great films, and he was actually really great in Saving Silverman, if you'll remember, as the football coach.
I love that. Underrated movie. I loved him in that movie. So good.
He takes the shit and just uses the mailbox, what's in the mailbox, to wipe.
Yeah, Ermey's like a legend, like amongst Marines. Like, I think he is the embodiment of the Marine Corps over the last 40 years, that whenever people look at him, they're like, or not for, like, goddamn, yeah. Maybe 40 years. Yeah, fuck. So they look at him and they think of, that's a Marine. When you usually mm-hmm. when people think of a stereotypical Marine, it's going to be his, like, there's only steers and queers in Texas, and you don't have horns. You can look like you suck a golf ball through a garden hose. And every single Marine, when they get out of boot camp, they go back and watch Full Metal Jacket, and they're like, actually, it's a little bit tougher than that. They are kind of white. Like, that's exactly.
But did you guys appreciate that movie after?
Yeah, and I actually was talking on Dallas Braden's show, Dialed In, this week, and I think that Ermey does a great job. Obviously, it's an iconic role. I think the best staff NCO on film is Jamie Foxx in Jarhead. I feel like he nails the role.
Yes. Yes.
He's perfect at it. When he kicks the head door open and Swofford's taking a shit and he still talks to him like he's not, that's a perfect staff NCO moment. When he makes Swofford come out to formation and he doesn't have a bugle, he asks for the bugle to be the reveille blower, And then he's like, there is no bugle. Use your damn mouth. And so I feel like... And that
is stereotypical NCO.
That is awesome. Junior Marine. You're a junior Marine if you're doing that shit. You're filling up the blinker fluid in the car. You're filling up the water fountain. You're doing all kinds of just straight up dumb shit. And I love it. I'll do it since you did the part on Ermy. I'll take the Bush. I'll take Barbara Bush.
I'm sorry. One last thing. I want to just say kind of like, especially for you two, you kind of got to look to Ermy as kind of somewhat of a mentor because he has such a distinguished career as a Marine, both as a drill instructor as well as serving in Vietnam. And then he goes on to the entertainment industry and has a very illustrious career. It's kind of similar to what you guys are doing as well.
Yeah, on a much smaller scale, for sure. Like, if you could reach those heights of fame, I think in our line of work, I think Kate and I both would sign that dotted line right now, for sure. I want to talk about Barbs, though. You can't separate Barbs without HW. I feel like their love relationship they have is one of the most beautiful things in modern politics. You can disagree with the Bushes on policy as all you want to with the Iraq War and how things went down with that. But one thing that you can't disagree with is their value on family. And I think that whenever you watch videos of HW talk about his wife and how much he beams over her, that's the kind of husband that I want to be. Like, whenever you see him speak to her and he reads his war letters from 1945 after he got shot down and he begins to talk about his young wife and he begins to weep talking about Barbara, I think those are the moments that you look for. And it puts you in a position where you understand that World War II was so drastic, so insanely violent, and you never thought that you went home. So every single letter that you wrote, you felt like you had to write your last one. And I think that's part of the reason why what HW said was so beautiful. And I think that HW won't be far behind, because usually when you have a love that strong, the heart can't take it. And
right.
Just like you can't take it when I say sound the retreat.